Uganda, September 8th, 2003. While we're waiting for the plane to get fuel, Michael and I talk about the Congo. What do you expect to see? He asks me. I tell him I've learned not to expect anything, not to think about it until I'm in it, because you're never prepared for what these places are really like. I want to meet the people and talk with them, get a sense of the place, and hopefully from that, talking with the UN, the military, and aid workers, I can get an idea of what's going on and why. September 9th, 2003. 5 minutes to wheels down. I focus out the window. It's so green. There are areas of thick, dense green jungle. I've been to so many different parts of Africa, but this is my first glimpse of Congo. It's stunning. Bunya. We stop at a displaced camp. These people came from Uturi in May. When the war broke out, they walked 120 kilometers. It is a sea of friendly, bold, and curious people. I am told the food rations are very limited here. As we walk, we're followed by many children. An old man, Menzeni, brings us into a hut to talk. It is made of mud, with UN blue tarp as a roof. There are men and women in the hut. The women here are tough. Mothers here are respected. They tell their story. 10 days in the forest, crossing rivers and eating roots and guava. Here a man has let us live on his property. We have help from local NGOs, but our biggest problem is food. We sleep on banana leaves, and there are many mosquitoes. They've had to leave everything, all their belongings, all their clothes. Some wear the same thing for a month. Driving back to the plane, we pass about 30 militiamen in camouflage pants without shirts, all of them with rifles. Back at the airport, we have to rush. We must land in Goma before sunset at 5:30. Goma. We talk about child soldiers. Many times, the guns are taller than the kids. How they can shoot them without falling over, I don't know. But they do. They do kill. Many of the children are on drugs. So the question is, how to fight an enemy when he has covered himself with children, drugged them, and handed guns to them? Do you shoot the kids? Ed said he had an 11-year-old girl point a gun at him once when he was taking a picture. She must have been told not to allow anyone to document the situation. There is a group of ex-child soldiers in Bunya, demobilized children. We will try to visit them tomorrow. Goma, September 10th, 2003. The first stop this morning is the UNHCR office to meet with Rwandan refugees. The main activity here for UNHCR is repatriation of Rwandan refugees who have been in Congo since 1994. I sit with a couple and their small baby. Someone who had already repatriated came back and told them it was safe. As we speak, all of the others stand around us in a circle listening. I discover the lady is Congolese, but her husband is Rwandan. I ask her if she was nervous, as a Congolese woman, to be going to Rwanda. And she responds, "I love my husband. It's as simple as that." The baby becomes restless. She begins breastfeeding. Her expression never changes. She is clear, calm, and straightforward. She's beautiful. Both she and her husband are barefoot. Their clothes are dusty. The baby's name is Tomsefo. In Swahili, it means glory from God. It's a girl. Goma. We pass soldiers with guns. It's complicated. They are a militia put together by the local government. They have brought some stability, but they have also been accused of harassment by local people on occasion. And if their leader decided that they should use force tomorrow, then they would, and they are 20,000 strong. It's a scary thought. we board a small air-serve plane. Less than 1 hour to Bunia. The displaced camp in Bunia is right next to the airport. It's the safest place to be. I'm introduced to a woman who is starting a committee in the camp. She's a widow with 2 children. She came here to be near the UN soldiers because so many people were killed in her town. She says across all communities in the Congo, unemployment is causing the most problems. Okay, she says, actually, security first, but then the jobs. She thanks me for coming from far away to see them. In that statement, I think how much a simple gesture, just visiting, means. No one here knows what I do for a living, my name, or if I have money. They just know that I came from a more fortunate country, that I'm a foreigner who cares how they are and wants to hear what they have to say. Bukavu. It's beautiful and lush. Many farmers and goats. Lake Kivu is on our left as we drive. And across the water, you can see Rwanda. We meet John. He tells us of a plan to visit Bunyakiri. Just beyond where we're going is the front line of fighting. The villagers have been looted over and over again. They rebuild again and again, with less every time. And on top of that, people outside the armies take advantage of the chaos and are picking the bones. Some villages have become organized. They cook and put packages together to appease the enemy. Others suffer far worse. They are tortured, pillaged, kidnapped, and enslaved. Interahamwe, Mai Mai, and RCD rebels are all operating in these areas. On any given day or any given week, villages could be raided by all three. That is how the violence continues to grow. When you're hungry, tortured, and your women are raped, you become desperate and violent. You've been brutalized, then you start to be brutal. September 11, 2003. We are up early for a long drive. It's a gorgeous morning. As we drive along the side of the cliffs, there are women with baskets on their head and babies on their backs. We arrive in Bunyakiri. Bunyakiri. We enter a room of all women. It's dark inside the cement room. Many hold babies and some are breastfeeding. The majority of the women are in their early 20s. We ask them to speak freely about what they've been through during the war. No one speaks. No one moves. We say, "You can tell us your story in general if you wish. It doesn't have to be very personal." We are the women of Bunyakiri. We have suffered a lot. We thank you for hearing us. Our homes were looted and burned. We slept in the forest. Many women died and many were killed. It feels as if the war was against us. The rape was the most shocking. They made us cook, then stole our food and brutally raped us. We had to plant in areas where we worked hard, and they would steal all our crops. If we got sick, we had no way to get to the hospital. We had no funds. We are displaced. We have nothing. And as a result of the violence, many of us have sexually transmitted diseases. Our families, after the rape, have banished us. And we cannot afford to send our children to school. Yesterday was the first meeting to unify the RCD rebels and the Mai Mai. The transitional process is fragile. But what is interesting here is that the Congolese people on the ground are working towards peace themselves. Militias and all ethnic groups, everyone. The local people and the local NGOs, with no outside help, are brokering their own peace deals in their areas. It's amazing. And they deserve support. As we fly out of Congo, I think of the young Congolese boys I met in Tanzania last year who fled their country after becoming orphaned from the war. I think of the hundreds of thousands living in the camps on the border, dreaming of one day being able to live at home in Congo. I believe I'm right in saying that peace here would not just stop the killing, but begin to give hope and stability to all of Africa.